Good evening, Don.
Good evening there, how are you going, Frank?
Welcome to Two Bob FM.
Thank you.
Don, back in 1994, you were awarded the Australian Artists Creative Fellowship,
right,
popularly known as the Keating. It was to formulate innovative teaching formats for general and specific application to school-age musicians, to compile a comprehensive database on your life and work to assist school and other students, to exchange music and information by tape to school bands in geographically isolated areas. Now, in times when governments are seemingly under closer scrutiny with regards to their expenditure, please tell us about your success stories and achievements since you were awarded this fellowship.
When it first came up, I didn't want to take it. I didn't want to do it for the very reason you outlined, because at the time, with the drought and the general situation the country's in, blah, 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 you know. So I actually went over to tell them so at the Australia Council, actually, because they rang and said, you've never acknowledged that, you've never accepted this thing to do it. And I said, well, it's been resting heavily on me. I'll come and talk to you and tell you why. And anyway, and I think now they were right. Because for the last 30 years I've been doing this type of thing, working in the outback as part of various sorts of programs, most notably initially the DCAP program, the Disadvantaged Country Area program. I know the effect that having somebody come to your town when it's a very isolated place and want to make music with you and work with your band and play for them and all, and explain a lot of things to them. I know the worth of it, because in 30 years I've had that much feedback from people who are now adults in your own studio. Right here, 5 minutes ago, one of the girls came in and she said, you came to my school when I was about six, you know, one of your staff. And that's the sort of feedback I'm getting. And I know it works. We did a thing not long ago, just George Cole and I, in the QPAC in Brisbane, to give you an idea. And that was actually to bus in children. We had 1,000 in the morning, 1,000 in the afternoon, every day of the week. 1,000 in the morning, 1,000 in the afternoon. They were from places which were easy enough reach to bus them in. And I knew this was going to be a big ask, and I knew that the end of the week was tough. We were going on to closed circuit television, and we reached every other child in the state of Queensland, in the bush. Before I went, I knew it was going to be a tough job, so I sent a list of needs I'd have to the stage manager, you see. Very big job this guy's got. Anyway, at the end of the week I said, listen, thanks a million, mate, we couldn't have done this without you. It's been an exhausting week, but we've done it, and I couldn't have done it without you. He said, I couldn't have done this without you. And I looked at him, I said, what do you mean? He's a guy about 40. Married with two kids. He said, you came to my school when I was 15. And he said, I was in the school out to the left of Roma in Queensland. And he said, you were talking about job opportunities around music and in music, and you mentioned stage managing. And I put my hand up and said, what's that? He said, you explained it. He gave me some contacts. He said, I'm the stage manager of the QPAC. And that sort of thing goes on a lot. Now I'm in a position to agree with them when they taught me that I should do it. Because it is so. And also, the fact is, as I say to the children, every school I go to, do you know why I'm here? And they say, no. I say, because somebody came to my school when I was nine and has given me a whole life in music. So I know the effect and the lasting impression that having a somebody come to your school, and it can be music, it could be art, it could be all sorts of things, but they're having in the schoolroom there with you has so much more impact and memory sort of factor to it than any amount of reading about something or listening to it on a record or watching it on television. So I do know it works, Frank, and they convinced me that I'd come this far and I'd learned so much about how to operate that I actually would be in a better position to make maximum use of such a funding than somebody sitting in an office somewhere guessing where to send me. So that's the way it is. I now spend most of the time structuring where I'm going to go and being on the phone with maps all around me and seeing where would be the logical best place to go relative to the cluster of towns within a proximity, all this sort of stuff. Engaging what the ages of the children are, what they play, how long they've been playing, so that we don't bus in the wrong group with the wrong group. So we've got compatibility. And what it's doing, apart from the great time we all have there and then, it's enabling children from far-flung communities who never would meet to become friends and pals, and they go on with it from there on, even when I'm not there. And it's just full of positives. It's not a negative element in it. And I think in an outback of Australia, which has had a hammering, a bit of positive event in the town means a whole lot, and that's how I see it. It is my priority. That's what I mainly do. That's my life. Everything else I do, whether it's playing with my band, fits in around my activities in the outback. It's such a big country there. I mean, the size of this place, when you start traipsing around, the thing that worries me the most with it all is that I can't reach every child. I want to, and it's impossible. I do the best I can, and it's hard to know, like, once I've been to a place, I've just come back, just a couple of days ago, I just come back from Euroa in Victoria, and that involves all towns like Bataghini, Yay, Tatong, Seymour, Violet Town, Strathbourg, and all these little places. And I was there exactly a year ago. I wasn't sure when I was first starting out whether it was better to pick particular areas and go to the same places regularly for 5 years. I can see a lot of worth in that, but then I feel guilty about the places I haven't been to. And when I was there the other day, they were speaking about, well, next year we'll do this. Well, I said, well, look, the only thing is, I don't know whether that's the fair way to do this, because it's taxpayers' money, and I've got to feel that I've at least tried to go as far and wide as I can cast the net, and that's what I'm doing. So I don't know the best way in that last instance, but I don't know. I just feel I've got to go to as many places as I possibly can right across the country.
And you're getting a lot of feedback.
Oh, it's enormous, Frank. It's enormous. You should see the letters from the kids. As a matter of fact, this second visit the other day, last week, to Euroa, I received several letters from children with chickenpox. There's been a real bad thing of chickenpox in the district. And these were kids that still had too many spots to come, but they were there the year before. And they just took it on themselves to write to me to say how disappointed they were that they couldn't be there. But to welcome me back to their town and their area and tell me how much they got out of that first time I came there. And that means a tremendous amount to me. And I've got drawers full of letters from kids all over the country.
Mm, that's important, isn't it?
It sure is. It proves that it's a worthwhile undertaking. So I now have thrown off that doubt I had, because I can see the benefits for the kids.
Do you go to these places by yourself, or you've
sub-delegating? Most of the time. No, most of the time by myself. But because I know the effect is even greater if I've got somebody with me, I try to devise ways where I can create a situation where I can take one. Like, I was taking George Goller. George and I were together for 38 years, and it reached the point that all this travel I've done on this for this fellowship in the last 18 months finally wore George out, and he had to pull out. He said, I cannot go another inch. He said, it's wearing me out. It is very tough going. I must be a bit in better nick than he, but so he pulled out, but up till then, occasionally could get him involved as well. And now I'm doing the same with his replacement, who's Kevin Hunt, on keyboards. And it's great when I can do that, because we're then able to actually operate as a little mini band and let the kids hear all the things about which I'm speaking to them and try to demonstrate one out. It's got far more impact with two. So where I can, yes, the last ones I did in Western Australia, I couldn't. It was just unaffordable to get anybody, so I just went by myself, you know. But I'm planning it in a way now, with this sort of hedge hopping, going back through places to which I've been, but going further each time, further on. And because of the goodwill I've established in that zone, I can now find people willing to let me save on the airfares and car hire and all that sort of stuff. And they'll drive me. Well, then there's enough in the kitty, and I can pay Kev to come. It's a matter of just being rationalising what's there, but don't lose sight of the fact that before I even get any funding, 48% of it's taken out at the source. I never see that. It's taxed at the highest level.
Going on to your performances, and I guess that is just about a part-time job for you these days. Yes. Are you writing new tunes?
Oh, yes, I am. Well, I'm inspired by a lot of the places I go to and see. And just 2 months ago, I took 30 country children to China, kids I've been working with in the area in Portland in Victoria. And I've been planning this for 5 years to do this big thing with them, because I started with them. This was the icing on the cake in a town where the kids had nothing musically. Now we've got two 40-piece orchestras, and we took one of those orchestras to China. Now, when I'm in China, I'm hearing Chinese music, I'm meeting Chinese musicians, I'm listening to all those influences, and sometimes I write a piece with that kind of influence in it. Just before Christmas, I went with another bunch of children to the Monterey Festival in America. They were from South Australia, these children. And there I heard Maceo Parker, one of the greatest funky bands I've ever heard in my life. And the kids and I were, even though there's an enormous age difference, we were equally enthralled by what this band was doing. And the latest pieces I'm starting to write now are along those lines.
What's it like working with Don Rader in comparison to James Morrison?
Well, I mean, Don Rader is one of my age group for a start, so you know, you're talking about a bloke over 60. I was 68 the other day. And Don is a name that has cropped up in my sort of reading of the personnel on records and that for quite a few years. He was with Woody Herman, he was with Les Brown, he was with this one and that one. So he's part of the story of Jazz Trumpet of America. And James, of course, I ran across when he was about 15 or 16, and then I had him in my band for 6 years. I took him a lot of places. It's two different extremes. One was watching a young kid develop and having a hand in that, and the other was getting with somebody about whom I'd read and knew, I'd heard a lot of, and suddenly we're making music together and we never even dreamed we'd meet. So two different circumstances, both terrific players and totally different in their concept of jazz too.
Who else will be in the band appearing at the Entertainment Centre on the 20th?
Well, there'll be the aforementioned Kevin Hunt on keyboard. You've got to hear Kev, he's a great player.
Yes,
I know. He was one of the kids at the con, he was one of my students, and the bass player, Dave Putney, he was one of the kids at the con. He'll be on bass, and our drummer, Gordon Rittmeister, he was one of the kids at the con. It's quite, I love that, it's marvellous to think that I first ran into these people when they came out of school, and now we're colleagues on the stage. Yeah. And of course our special guest, Don Rader.
I'm going to really throw you in the deep end here, Don. I'm going to do a little blindfold test with you. Mm-hmm. It's a brand new release, so I hope you enjoy it.
I hope I know who it is. I probably won't have a clue to that, Frank. Thank you.
actually a piece called Serpentine.
It's lovely, I like it very much. It's the sort of thing that's quite close to my heart, the use of the percussion like that. It sounds like it could be a lot of guys. There's a bit of David Jones in the way some of the little bits are being played with it in the early parts. The bass player sounds young to me. He sounds like one of the new brigade, like Adam Armstrong or Lloyd Swanton.
You got it there. Lloyd Swanton is the bass player.
Really, is it?
Mm-hmm.
And then the saxophone could be... It sounds to me like one guy who's overdubbed rather than a lot of different bodies. I don't know whether I'm right there. And it sounds a bit like...
I can tell you that the soprano player there is actually female.
Really? Don't tell me it's not Sandy, is it?
Exactly.
Oh, really? I wouldn't have picked that Sandy.
Mm.
No, I wouldn't have picked that. Okay, so that's Sandy.
Sandy Evans, Tony Gorman.
Right.
Alistair Spence.
Oh, that's... See,
and Toby Hall.
Was one of the... Well, each of those were students at the con when I was in charge of the con there.
Yeah, and the album Less Stable Elements.
It's lovely. It's lovely.
It's a brand new release on Rufus. It's really wonderful music.
Yeah, it's very, very nice. One I haven't heard. Yeah, it's good.
I was just looking at one of the liner notes from your 50 Years series not long ago. It seems you have great respect for David Jones, the drummer.
My word.
What really sets him apart from the rest of the Australian jazz drummers?
Well, it's a hard thing to actually say, but until the likes of David Jones came along, the actual... Well, you've heard the old joke, that it's a terrible sort of thing to say, and I don't subscribe to it, but it's had to have been made up for a reason years ago. But James says about his brother John too. John says, started out, he wanted to be a musician, but he gave it up and became a drummer. And one of the things is that there was a degree in this country of people taking drums as a way into jazz, because basically, once they had just a good time feel going and that... A lot of them didn't put in a lot of work to elevate their hands to the virtuoso level. Not that that's a must, but when you start to look at role models for drummers, from everybody from Buddy Rich to Max Roach, anyone you like, you realise there's a tremendous amount of actual damned hard work dexterity going on there. Now, David Jones came along and he did that. He actually more than paid his dues. He really elevated his instruments, all the drums around him, and even if it was a garbage can, he'd create wonderful sounds because of the tremendous work he put into the artistry of percussion. He took it to another level in this country, which for my money made him a fantastic role model for all those coming along, and that's why I applaud him so loudly.
Can you describe one of your most memorable musical experiences?
I've been very lucky. I've been in some heavy company and I've enjoyed them all. I hate to leave anybody out, you know, but because it's all meant so much to me. But I suppose if I had to say something which stays with me so much would be the 6 weeks George Gomer I spent in Brazil. It was just mind-blowing. The musicality of the people in general and the artistry of the musicians in particular and the singers. Boy, I tell you, that was the most musical community I've ever been around. And
was that around the time you recorded with Luiz Bonfim?
That followed. Those visits were as a result of me going to Brazil, yes, and with Bernier and Cartier and those things, yes. I was so impressed, I had to do everything I could to get some of them out here so the public could hear some of the music from both the young, through Bernier and Cartier, and the old established, like Luiz Bonfim. I just wanted to give them just a taste. And it turned the town and to a large degree the country on its ear at the time, because they'd never really been exposed, and neither had we till we went there. We thought we knew what the Brazilian thing was around, but we were getting the diluted version, with all due respect. But, you know, as good as it was, great as it was, but the stuff that a lot of the American jazz musicians were doing with Brazilians was quite different to what we discovered when we got there with the real thing in their own setting. It's another world. And that world would have to rank very highly with my great experiences.
What was the most recent recordings you listened to in your own living room?
Maceo Parker. Yeah. I love that funk band of his. It's too much. I can't think of the name. Frank someone or Fred somebody on trombone with him. It's too much. It's a great group. And especially having... I bought several of their albums when I was there, their CDs, and it brings it all back. Just how exciting that band was. How much they got out of virtually so little as far as chord structures are concerned. It was just the feel was great.
Mm.
It's a great example for the kids to listen to. If their first encounter with anything to do with the jazz thing, they can really relate to that.
I guess funk is a good tool for that, because they can go back and see what these musicians
are
playing.
That's right, where they've come from too. Mm. That's right. Whereas if you started to new ears with John Coltrane or something, it's too much too soon.
Too much
icing and not enough cake. And I believe, you know, that's like it's an advanced level of appreciation and postgraduate. But something where they can really relate to the time feel and the excitement, the earthiness of it.
Thanks again, Don.
Thanks a lot, mate.